It's 27 minutes after the hour and high time on this Tuesday morning that we turned our attention to something more serious, less frivolous, less less chiffon-like.
And less sugar-coated? Is that what you're
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, we were just discussing the name chiffon. It was a singing group in the late 50s and early 60s and wondered, what is chiffon? I didn't know what chiffon was. So we Googled it. And lo and behold, it was just, it's frothy fabric or it's frothy stuff to eat with egg white, which which just seems, and it's both a noun and an adjective. There's something wrong with that,
Chiffon is the same as meringue?
No, well, meringue would be chiffon-like. You know, it's kind of soft and fluffy.
It has the characteristics of chiffon.
Yeah.
Now it sounds like you're talking to the DA in Georgia.
We're talking to Dr. Don Clark, because Don, we need to bring a little science to bear here. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a vintner of note. Now, which note is up to you, but it's in Garden Valley, Texas, up there, little east of us.
G flat.
I was wrestling with two articles that I sent to Don for consideration to talk about. One has to do with the new EPA rules to cut CO2 emissions in electricity generation. And there are two noteworthy scientists. One is the professor emeritus in physics at Princeton, the other professor emeritus of atmospheric science at MIT. And they say these are bunk. They're not based on science. It'll be disastrous for the country for no scientifically justifiable reason. Now, the other article was a Breakpoint program from the Colson Center, John Stone Street, just a few days ago on evolution that talked about settled science. So they both talk about settled science, which Don pointed out. So I guess that's really the topic, is settled science. But let's start with this EPA stuff. We've covered global warming or climate change issues before, but now the EPA has published regulations, and I'm wondering, one, do they have the authority to do this at all? And two, how can they justify these things because the science doesn't support it? Don? It's all political, eh?
Well, that's interesting because you've got, those that are in the climate change research field, of course, they get their funding from the governments, and it's governments of the world. I mean, we're talking about the U.S. as well as all the European. And if you are working at a university and want funding in climatology or something like that, you better support the political correct agenda.
Well, here's a clue too. They show a picture here. It's a man going up an escalator with a big sign on the wall behind him. It's time for net zero. Are you in? The photo was taken at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow in 2021. So they've had their hand in this for years already. The UN, I mean.
Oh, but yeah, for sure. And of course, anything coming out of the UN, there's a political agenda, and it doesn't have anything to do with science. And you know, there's thousands of scientists out there that will say, "Oh, yeah, the globe is definitely warming, and it's because of CO2." And these two folks, are saying, among others, they're not the only ones, but are saying, "Hey, wait a minute! If you look at the science behind it, and whether or not CO2 is causing our temperature change, and how much temperature change is actually taking place," they say that, well, you know, the temperature is not changing that much. And all of the predictive models, or at least 99.9% of the predictive models, are wrong, have been wrong, and continue to be wrong. And all the models that point to, hey, you know, we're going to have the Earth is going to be burning up here shortly. Of course, AOC several years ago said 12 years, that's it. The Earth is history if we don't do something right now in order to fix this problem. Well, the models have been consistently wrong for,
now, those models, as I understand it, those models were solicited by the United Nations, and each one has been proposed by a different country, or maybe several from the same country, but it's spread across many different nations that have proposed these, but they're all wrong in the same direction. How can that be?
Well, because they have the wrong assumptions, and they don't put enough parameters in their models, and our the desired result is to say that we have a catastrophe, so that we can tax people more, and we can change the way we produce energy, which of course is going to cost us billions upon billions of dollars. You think your energy bill is high now? Wait until we only have solar and windmills, and then your energy is going to, you know, really go skyrocketing. In Germany, for example, they have windmills and solar panels all over the place, and their energy cost has doubled since they put those in. And so we can look forward to more of that. If there isn't some, I'm glad these two scientists are standing up and saying, wait a minute, this is going to be a catastrophe, at least for the United States, and it'll be a catastrophe for the world. The models, then, most of the models, that is 99%+ of the models are wrong.
So there are 30 to 40 models, as I understand, 30 to 40 of them. And as in my reading, only one was correct, and that was the one proposed by Russia.
The graph that they show in this article, mm-hmm. is only one is correct, and that probably is the Russian model, as we've mm-hmm. talked about before. So why ignore the one model that is correct and propose that all of the other models are showing that, oh, we're going to have this tremendous increase in temperatures over the next several years. So we got to really buckle down, and everybody needs to sacrifice in order to lower the CO2. And it's not just lowering the amount of CO2. It's having what's called net zero CO2. That is, you can't change whatever your system is. You better not be putting any more CO2 into the atmosphere, or you better be doing some remediation to take CO2 out of the atmosphere so you can put it then back into the atmosphere. And there are plants now, I mean, not physical, biological plants. There are energy plants that are trying to take CO2 out of the atmosphere and go through a chemical process to make methane, which is natural gas, so that the methane coming out the other end then could be used for energy, and thus you have net zero carbon dioxide, because you've taken so much carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, so now you can put it back in terms of methane. And natural gas, we know, is the cleanest form of energy that we could be burning in order to generate electricity. The one who thinks that net zero is absolutely desirable, and not only desirable, is a must, because these ridiculous climate models are saying that we're going to burn up, then, would be pushing for this. Unfortunately, our own governor here in Texas is behind this, and there is a plant being built here in Texas of that ilk, if you will, so we can be net zero here in Texas. Now, Texas, as you know, produces a lot of oil. There's a lot of
oil
in Texas. And to avert the oil industry and do something like this is crazy.
Another aspect of that is Texas has no income tax. And that's largely because the state makes so much money from oil.
So we have high property taxes, though.
That's true. That's true. But
so
expect them. Expect
kinda,
them to go
kinda
up.
Kind of offset. Yeah, that kind of offsets the the income tax. But still, I would rather live here than, let's say, New York or some, and even the crazy state of California. Hmm. But be that as it may, so is the basic question: does CO2 really cause temperatures to rise? And they had a very interesting graph in this article that, and you know that that they said, well, you know, we're currently at about 400 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere, plus or minus 20, you know, parts per million, and yes, burning fossil fuels has increased the CO2. But there's a couple of considerations here. One, CO2 levels in the past have been tremendously higher, like at the 1,000 parts per million levels, if not even higher than that, in if you go back in history.
Yeah, this was long before burning fossil fuels, correct?
Before even, yeah, before even we thought about burning fossil fuels, you know, the CO2 levels were high for a number of reasons. And the earth didn't burn up, and the animals and humans survived, and it wasn't a catastrophe. The other interesting fact that they brought out in this article, which I hadn't known before, is that CO2 kind of reaches its maximum effect, you know, after a certain percentage is already in the atmosphere. For example, if you look at the CO2's contribution, let's say, to energy and blocking radiation back out into space, which is the greenhouse effect, it from going from zero parts per billion CO2, by the way, if we had, in which another point which I'll talk about in a minute, but going from zero parts per million to 400 parts per million decreases the irradiance or the radiation back out into space by 30%. And we say, okay, well, you know, that sounds like a lot. So if I double that number and go from 400 parts per million to 800 parts per million, it increases the decreases the radiation back out into space by 1%.
So it's not linear. It's not linear.
No, it's not linear. It's exponentially declining, you know, number, and it doesn't. It's not you know, it doesn't have that much effect. So, of course, all of the models are wrong because they contribute way too much effect of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than they should. And so what would happen if we reduce, and we've talked about, you know, this in the past, CO2 is not our enemy. You know, CO2 is our friend because if we have an increase in CO2, then we have an increase in plant life. And if we have an increase in plant life, then we have more food to feed people with than we did when CO2 levels were lower. It's just a simple fact. And the way, if you want to have, in quote, net zero, even though there is absolutely no reason to have net zero, as I just explained, that, you know, even if we doubled the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, we're not changing the temperature hardly at all by the greenhouse effect, because it's not having that much more effect on the radiation being radiated, you know, back out into space. So, but increasing the CO2 would have a tremendous effect on plant growth. So CO2 is a plant food, and it's not a poison, if you will, and it's not this temperature moderating type of thing that the more CO2, then the higher the temperatures. That's not the case. And the other thing that the political climate scientists, I will say, you know, they in EPA themselves, they massage the data so that it looks like the temperatures are going up, you know, these days compared to, let's say, the 1930s. But in fact, in 1930, the temperature was significantly higher than it is today, global temperatures. you know, if you look at the actual temperatures plotted versus time, you will see that the little increase in temperature that we're having right now is typical of what we've had in the past. So, for example, if the temperature if the relative temperature is zero back in 1920s, for example, back in the 1930s, it jumped to 1.3 increase in degrees globally, and then rapidly fell back down. We're at the 0.2 level, which is not a typical cycle, you know, for the temperature around the globe. So, you know, the CO2 is not having any effect in this, but the EPA wants to impose these regulations that say, oh, we've got to have net zero by, you know, such and such a date, and you've got to turn off your gas stoves, and we got to kill all the cows. We can't have the cows, you know, eating vegetation, for example. You know, we've got to do all of these things in order to, you know, mitigate, you know, the temperature of the earth from burning up. Well, you know, what they don't say, if anybody who's read their Bible, especially in Revelation, the earth will burn up, but it's not going to be due to man's activity. It's going to be due because the Creator God will say, enough is enough. And we're going to, you know, one of the bowls of wrath, for example, will be that a third of the earth will burn up. But it's not going to be, you know, due necessarily to man's activity. It's going to be due to God's wrath on the earth and God trying to get man's attention and saying, hey, the end is near. You better straighten yourself up and realize that there is a Creator and that I'm getting ready to punish those who don't believe. So all of this nonsense about, you know, climate change and this, if you just look at the real data instead of the manufactured data that EPA and these other agencies, especially these national agencies and international agencies are throwing out there, they're massaging the data and they're trying to scare people into a political direction so that they could continue, you know, to control us and direct our behavior in the direction that they want.
Yeah, this article suggests, seemingly, that the solution to the problem will not come from science. Now, we're not going to all of a sudden start looking at the science honestly and adopt what it says, what the data says it is happening, but it's going to come from legal sources. And they mentioned the State Farm principles, where the courts overrule the EPA, saying it does not have authority to invent regulations that have such an enormous impact on Americans without clear direction from Congress. So these two are two eminent scientists are bucking the EPA, but I think if there is a way to stop them, maybe it's legal and not scientific. What do you think?
Well, if our legal system would get its act together and actually, you know, do things that they're supposed to be doing, you know, we've got, and they mentioned it here. It's what the EPA is doing, what the UN is doing, what this all these climate models are doing. It's all deception. It's all deception. And so we're learning, certainly in this country, and it looks like in other countries as well, that if you have the right lawyer or the attorney general, and they happen to be, instead of actually applying the law the way it should be applied, they invent new laws, then we have a problem. And so it all depends on, you know, you know, corruption just breeds more corruption unless honest and God-fearing man and woman, you know, stand up and say, no, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. So it's going to take all of us to start, you know, speaking out and say, this isn't right. No, this is, you guys are wrong. Here's the evidence. It's time for you guys to be, you know, to stop promoting this this agenda, because we're not going to go along with it.
And stop throwing this label settled science around, because as you've explained numerous times here on the air, there is no such thing as settled science, whether it applies to climate change or to evolution. And there's another article we've taken a look at. This was a Breakpoint program from John Stone Street just a few days ago. That talks about evolution and how they have just kind of assumed settled science when science, the science does not support their position. That's the same problem over on that side of the scale when we get to evolution. And this is your wheelhouse too, Don. We've talked about evolution many times, and as I recall, we've pretty well concluded it's more of a faith system than biology.
Well, that's correct. I mean, it is when you talk about evolution, you're really talking about a religion, and it's the religion, it's the anti-God religion. You know, it's a anti-Christ religion, if you will. It's a pseudoscience attempt to explain away the creation. And so you have to believe that, well, I don't want to believe in God, so therefore, you know, I got to come up with some other explanation as to why there's biological life here on Earth, and maybe it's spread out amongst the universe. We don't know. We're looking and hoping to find it. But so you start with, well, you know, if life just evolved here on Earth, then we need to have a system to explain that. And, you know, we talked about Charles Darwin and other people that, you know, said, well, you know, life just evolved with a gradual change over a long period of time.
Survival of the fittest, in essence, I guess, is a good summary of their position.
Yes. So, you know, environment pushes is the driving force behind evolution. And so if you change, you know, if you change the environment, then organisms change. And of course, you know, Darwin used the finches, the variation in the finches, as his defense for his evolutionary story. Now, the fact is that they were all finches, and some had large beaks and some had small beaks. And the ones with small beaks happened to live on that part of the island that had plenty of rain and they could easily get to their food. The ones with large beaks lived in a drier part of, and they had to get the hard seeds, and so they needed larger beaks to survive. But a finch is still a finch, and we now know that the DNA of the finches haven't changed. It's the environmental pushing expression of different genes in order to you know, produce the different finches. So the problem is, we, you know, back in the 40s, 50s, we discovered DNA, and we discovered that, whoa, this is a double helix, and here's the code, and that there was a coding to the DNA, and the coding, you know, coded for proteins in the cell. And we're finding more and more complexity. The deeper we look at biology, we're finding more and more complexity. And it's that complexity that confuses the evolutionist, because, gee, we didn't think it was this complex, and it looked like, you know, things just changed because of the environment, but there's, you know, control mechanisms after control mechanisms on expression of the various genes, and the organism, yes, wants to survive. That's the way God designed it. that an organism will survive. But you never see a jump in, we've never seen, you know, for example, a fish turn into a mouse or, you know, something else. You know, we've seen fish that look like they have little flappers that, you know, could walk on land, and we say, okay, there's an example of evolution. And no, that's just the way that particular fish was created, because it needed to create to survive in a certain environment. And so, you know, the more biological information we get, the more we learn that this is a very complex system. It didn't evolve. It looked like there was a creator. But these evolutionary scientists just refuse to accept that point, so they keep looking deeper and deeper and deeper. But it's settled science.
Well, there's no such thing as settled science. You've made that point. Science always changes with new data. And I should mention that there's a link to each of these articles we've been talking about, one from the Epic Times, the other from Breakpoint. Links are now in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to follow up, especially with the global warming article. And you could take a look at those graphs and what actually has been happening now with these computer models. In either event, I think we can summarize this perhaps by saying science is not a god, and there are those that assume it's a god, but science is subject to man's foibles. God is not. And so we have one case, in the case of climate change and global warming, where there is valid science that has been interpreted wrongly, and then evolution, where there's no science at all to back the assertion that evolution is true. So, Don, I think you made the point well and emphasized it once again. Don is the board member at Creation Moments. I want to mention their website. It's creationmoments.com, and there is a reservoir, a library of scientific information there that supports the biblical story of creation. We recommend you visit them at creationmoments.com. Don, as always, we're glad you came. We learned something. We're better off for your having been here today. Have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And you folks have a great week.
Yeah. Bye-bye.